Along the line, well, first of all, let me say, express my appreciation for your assistance with our esteemed chair and interim ED in her effort to save WBAI and joining that team and assisting her. So I wanted to express my appreciation for your assistance in that effort to begin with. But secondly, along the lines of saving Pacifica money and protecting your reserves, one of the greatest expenses is legal expenses growing out of elections. So my question to you is when will you provide the unpaid staff organization a copy of the staff list, paid and unpaid, so that that does not turn into a lawsuit?
The list of paid and unpaid staff has been posted at the station, so unpaid staff and paid staff can look at it and make sure that if they do qualify to participate in governance elections, that they make sure that their name is on it if by any chance it's left off. In terms of contact information, in conversation with Ricardo and Grace, we presented an alternative, which is to send contact information to a mail house, which will protect the privacy of paid and unpaid staff, but also meet the need of the organizers of the unpaid staff. Recently, I posed a question to them. I don't know if anyone is here. Maybe Anthony, if he's here, can speak to it. I posed a question to them a couple of days ago asking why they didn't have members as an organization. They also have the responsibility of generating their membership list. And according to the Pacifica bylaws, it's actually the unpaid staff organization representatives who come up with a list of unpaid staff who qualify to run or vote. That list gets verified by the unpaid staff themselves by posting it at the station and also by management to just verify its accuracy.
Joe is next, and then Rico, and then...
Thank you all for your very informative report.
You must be proud.
I actually am, yourself, Lem, Sasha, and Eileen. Because, you know, in Pacifica, we probably lean, or our bias more towards qualitative ways of assessing things. But it's good to have data, hard data, even though, as Sasha mentioned, some of it, use it with a grain of salt, against which to measure where we are. I would, you know, in your report, I mean, there's a lot here, and obviously, as you say, it's probably more useful to go back and read it, absorb it, get questions to you later. But I'd like to get a little bit of your perspective, just touching a little bit on the question of internal culture that resists change. I mean, throughout the network, obviously, we're faced with a crisis, and we're probably going to have to change a lot of the ways in which we operate. So that's sort of, it's a network-wide concern. But, you know, my own experience at the station, for example, on the Program Council, it seemed to me that there is a lot of interest within the station around, you know, at least in terms of programming, towards making changes. And during the time I was in Program Council, we made decisions to bring several new programs onto the air. And of course, there were some that are still pending because there's only so many hours in a day and so forth. Now, not to say that, you know, this isn't legitimate, but I'd just like to get a sense of your standpoint, because I'm sure there are other areas where there is a resistance to change, and I'd be interested to know a little bit about what those are. Just areas where, you know, in other words, when you say there's an internal culture that resists change, what's your sense of that? Because I have a different experience, at least in my own perhaps limited involvement at the station on Program Council.
I see. So you're saying that you have a different perspective than what I'm stating, which is we have a difficult time accepting change, or we don't have a culture right. that's flexible to change.
Right. In other words, and not that one or the other is true or not true, but I'd just like to get a sense from your standpoint where the resistance lies to change, because my own experience is that there's a lot of interest within the station for things to
right.
change.
Right. My experience too is that there's a lot of interest. It's just that when change actually starts to happen, then nobody likes it. When it's just a discussion about how change needs to happen, everybody's happy to talk about it. And everybody, I mean, it's an issue of what do we mean by change? Change towards what? I mean, there's a lot of stakeholders and different perspectives. So maybe that's where it becomes nuanced, and it requires discussion and process and goals and agreement, buy-in, et cetera. But in general, we're not necessarily an institution that easily has systems in place, has the culture of making change, has a culture of measuring success, and know what we do with that measurement. Do we then institute change? Do we continue to just operate and exempt if we're failing? We don't really have those systems. So we're... It would be great to have everything in place, but there's also the as Grace puts it, you know, an immediate need for improvement. Ideally, we would have a plan we all agree on, we all set goals, and we all agree that we're going to make specific changes and we're going to all work towards those. And maybe you can help and coach and facilitate that from happening so that we can improve.
You know what? It's 7:11 or 7:12, something like that.
Dinner time.
So
we also have food at the station, just so you know, if you don't get enough here. We have actually really good food. We want to get on your good side. We've ordered really delicious food.
So good. So we have 3 people on the stack left. I ask you to make it brief, and then we're going to end for dinner.
Okay.
Carolyn, I believe, is... Oh, no, Rico's next.
Hello? Yeah, Limon, thank you guys again for your excellent report. I would like to say about music, Sasha, I know that you said that young people don't tend to listen to radio. I think they do listen to radio. I think they listen to music, though. And I think that it is important to attract those young people, even though they may not be the ones that are paying the big bucks when they sign on, because they can be long-term and long-term listeners, which will later on pay dividends. Secondly, as a listener rep, I find it I'm urged to ask this question. How are you planning on balancing the concept of having collaborations with it not becoming a thing where it no longer is a localized station that deal directly with the community's issue at hand? And lastly, how does your data that you are showing us here compare with other stations so that we know that it's not just so we can determine whether it's not just KPFK, but all radio stations that are having the same kind of change?
Okay, so let's see if I can do that. Starting with the last. Nathan Moore, the National Programming Coordinator, before he left, did a study, which will now be a year out of date, but of the listening patterns for the 5 stations, and we had a lot in common. So I don't know if you've seen that, but you might want to get a hold of it. If someone can't provide it, I think I have a copy. A lot of the places where we have problems seem to be places that our sister stations do as well. Democracy Now! Is our most successful program. Big Tune Out after Democracy Now!, so that's one challenge.
I'm sorry, I was talking about other commercial stations
commercial
as well.
Stations.
So that we know that whether just radio, people are listening more or not listening more.
Oh, got it, right. Public radio, I can't speak for commercial stations because I think they kind of follow a different logic. But for public radio stations, the pattern that I mentioned of kind of peak after the invasion of Iraq, Afghanistan, and then a fall off, they all had it. The difference is that actually public radio stations, other non-Pacifica public radio stations, and of course that's a big group to generalize about, have actually started picking up again, and we're not. So that's of concern. In terms of your question about young people and music, it's a really good one. Younger people, when they are listening to the radio, are listening to music. Of course, a lot of younger people, particularly I'm thinking people in their teens and 20s, are listening to music through other channels, so iPods where it's on demand. That is, it's sort of hard to compete with that. However, KPFA and Pacifica were founded actually on this notion of having culture be a mechanism to reach the larger public. In fact, while KPFA ended up in Berkeley, it was originally supposed to be in Richmond, and the idea was for it to be a station that had a great deal of music and culture as a way of reaching a wider audience, so that, you know, with the idea that people are too easily mobilized to go to war, how do you get people to engage around pacifism? So that actually is really at the core of what we are. And I think while I emphasize a lot of public affairs in my presentation, a lot of that's also because those are our paid shows and they're in time slots where there's potentially the most listeners. Music is a fundamental part of our mission. And if I can use this phrase, it's, you know, sort of a gateway drug to ending up with, you know, finding our politics, encountering our politics. I know that as a student here, I first came across KPFA because of the music. So that's a really important thing to keep in mind. And then your last question, I think, was about localism and national. Right. So I think that's a really great question. I think that is a tension that I think always every station is going to have to assess at every moment. What is the balance of local programming to national programming? And actually, I would even sort of tweak that a little bit. What's the balance between regional programming and national programming? Because KPFA reaches a third of California, and there's a propensity for people to think it's an East Bay station because it's easy to get to KPFA if you live in the East Bay. But I think people in Stockton and Modesto have as much of a stake in what we put on the air as anyone living in Berkeley. So thinking of ourselves regionally, I think, is a central part, and we don't want to lose that. So it's a question of always, I think, revisiting that question, balancing it out. I think it's great to be able to share resources. We also need to keep serving listeners here. And the regionalism and the localism is actually part of our strength, you know, what we have that other people aren't providing. So, again, that's a really crucial dimension.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry for the long answer.
Carolyn, did you still have something?
Yes, thank you. Briefly, I just wanted to speak to one point that Lem made about the staff list. The staff lists are actually directives from the PNB. I think directing from 2005, the board has directed that general managers keep their own lists.
Yes.
So while it's good that unpaid staff organizations have their lists, it is the responsibility of the general managers to keep a list,
yes,
perhaps the list, and then they would be compared for discrepancies.
We have a list. We recently posted it to make sure that everyone who should be on it was on it. There were maybe 6 people who were accidentally left out and that were added and still exists with complete information.
I just wanted to make it clear. It's not their responsibility.
George?
Right. I was just saying in the bylaws it says they generate. The unpaid staff organization generates the list that...
No, it doesn't say that, I don't think.
Oh.
No.
Yes, okay. We have fulfilled that responsibility in terms of having an accurate list of unpaid staff.
Okay.
The fact that the Arbitrons and the web data track well indicates that you could use the web data to get hour by hour listenership information and that you could use that to decide whose shows really don't have much listenership. Do you have any plans for doing that as part of evaluating the relative success of the shows?
I want to talk about PPM and how that will allow us to.
So I think, if I'm right, all the other stations have switched to PPM, which is the portable people meter.
Yes.
Which KPFA doesn't have, but will have by the end of this month. So we're behind on that data. That actually does fine-tune things to a much more... hour-by-hour information. Of course, the danger there with any statistic is if you get too specific and little, it can skew your information. So, like, actually, what I didn't say is with these graphs, I averaged information over time or over books to try and come up with a sample that actually meant something. The same needs to be done with that information. But clearly, having information where you can zero in on programs throughout the week that aren't on strips is important information to take into account. How one then weighs this, you know, quantitative information is also another question, I think, for each station as well.
Thank you.
Do you have plans to do that? Do you have plans to actually use that stuff?
To use our information, yes.
That particular information.
Sure.
Okay, thank you so much. Let's give Lynn a hand. And excellent presentation. Very, very good. And now we're going to take a break for dinner.
Can I just ask, can I